Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, covering the inner workings and business side of professional wrestling, interviewing wrestling's biggest stars, chronicling pay-per-views, house shows, controversies, and so much more for over 29 years in the weekly newsletter. You can read almost all of them online, on demand, instantly, as a VIP member. I've been publishing it since 1987 with a great team of writers, a great staff, great correspondents sending in reports from all over the world, and great readers making it possible for me and the whole team to do what we've done for nearly three decades. And part of the evolution of the Torch is this live cast. We are now on the air five, six, 7 days a week live with a call-in show, and tonight is one of them. It is Monday, December 19th. 2016, immediately following Monday Night Raw. The scene just closed out the show of Braun Strowman interrupting the main event and attacking Roman Reigns and then Seth Rollins, Jericho and Owens, the main event opponents of Seth and Roman, happy to help out by throwing Roman Reigns back into the ring to get power slammed by Braun Strowman. And Braun Strowman looks like he's getting set up for a big match at WrestleMania. You don't get to interrupt and beat up two top baby faces if there aren't big plans for you. And I want to know what you think. Do you think they've done a good job pushing Braun Strowman? Yes, he's not going to have a classic, you know, four and a half star match of the year candidate in a traditional sense. But are they doing a good job setting up intrigue for you as a fan to kind of see who can knock him down or try to knock him down? And what is his ceiling? Do you think that he could be at the level of an Undertaker opponent? Would it be smart for them to set up Braun Strowman to be someone who gets Undertaker, after he destroys a bunch of people, Undertaker, the music, the bell tolls, the music plays, and the fans and the announcers get excited that we finally found the person who's going to take out Braun, this beast, this monster? Corey Graves asked at the end of Raw tonight, who can stop him? So let's talk about it. If you've got some ideas on that, you can email the show right now, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. You can also call the show, of course. Our phone number, 515-605-9345. So again, the email, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. And the phone number, 515-605-9345. Also, Charlotte and Bayley go one-on-one. They transition away from Charlotte versus Sasha Banks. Sasha concedes Charlotte was a better woman last night. Nia Jax comes out and says, I'm next, basically, to Sasha, and beats her up, kicks the crutch out from under her leg. I'm glad that somebody is selling something. Owens and Jericho seem just fine after the heavy-handed beatdown that Rollins and Seth gave him last night at Roadblock, end of the line. And now, at least you have Sasha Banks, after her match, selling a leg injury, which is smart because it helps sell the idea that she tapped out for good reason because her leg was damaged by Charlotte's figure four turned into a figure eight. And then later in the show, Bayley came out and said it's time for a new rivalry. And Charlotte underestimated her and offered to accepted her challenge to wrestle. Bayley scored a leverage pin on Charlotte, which the replay showed was not actually a three count. Corey Graves saying Charlotte's shoulder lifted at the three count. Michael Cole praised him for that observation. So that's another top story coming out of tonight's show. Enzo sent to sensitivity training along with Darren Young, Bob Backlund, Bo Dallas, all had previously been missing in action recently from Raw, and Jinder Mahal too. So it was both sensitive. Apparently that's where they've been because those four got their diplomas for attending the show. Enzo sort of did too, even though he only went, or the show, the session. Enzo only went to one session, but also got a certificate or diploma. But maybe those other four have been in various sensitivity training courses all these weeks and months since they were fixtures of the show. We can talk about what you thought of the Enzo sensitivity training skit. It's something we get from time to time from WWE programming. Do you think it worked? Or do you groan and get embarrassed that you're a WWE and pro wrestling fan when you watch stuff like that? Obviously, there's a whole range of opinions on that kind of thing. And let's hear from you and what you thought of tonight's show. You can talk about those topics and others tomorrow. I'll be by right after SmackDown. They announced Dean Ambrose against Luke Harper with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt at ringside for tomorrow's SmackDown. I'll be on the air with Greg Parks, PWTorch.com SmackDown correspondent, longtime Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist. He'll join me once again to talk our night SmackDown. And then on 205 Live, while we are on the air live, 205 Live will build to a headline match of the newly turned heel Neville in a tag team match with Brian Kendrick against Rich Swann and TJ Perkins. So with Austin Aries, of course, on commentary, the greatest man who ever lived. So that is what was announced. That stage was set for Tuesday night. We'll be here talking about it and live watching 205 Live tomorrow night. So join me then. Jim Ross joined me last Thursday. If you missed that, highly encourage you to check out the hour that Jim Ross gave to us here on the live cast, discussing his insights and opinions on will Shawn Michaels return to the ring? What would it take for Shawn Michaels to return? Jim Ross created a scenario that he thinks would lead to Shawn Michaels seriously considering, if not agreeing to return. What was that? You can check out the Thursday interview with Jim Ross. Of course, you can find that at pwtorchlivecast.com. And then Brad Stutz, the scribe for Broken Matt Hardy, on last Thursday's special episode of TNA Impact Wrestling. Brad Stutz joined Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant, and he talked about the making of that very special episode of Impact Wrestling. So total nonstop deletion. Get some insights on an odd show. It's a show with very diverse opinions. We ran an online poll at pwtorch.com asking what people thought of the show. Very split, wide range of opinions on whether people liked it or didn't like it. But you can learn more about it, gain some insight from somebody involved in it. Brad Stutz, a very highly respected wrestling mind and promoter of CWF Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, knows the Hardys well, and a lot of cameos from that area, old and young, in last Thursday's episode. So some really good content over the past 5 days. In fact, if we go back all the way to Wednesday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joined me for some big picture conversation about more than just Raw and SmackDown. Talked about a wide range of topics in the wrestling industry. Very much a can't miss show every time Jason Powell is on. He does a tremendous job on the live cast, just as he does at his website, ProWrestling.net. And he'll be back later on this month with some more analysis on the midweek flagship. All right, so that sets the stage for what we're going to do on the show. So we're going to go to the first break. When we come back, it is going to be phone calls and emails the rest of the way, and the phone lines are filling up quickly. So if you want to be on the show, call now, 515-605-9345. Or if you can't call, you can join those who have already emailed at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Should be a fun show. Got some good stuff to talk about. I am genuinely curious about those main topics. Do you like the transition with Charlotte and Bayley? What is next for Braun? Where do you think he'll peak? And who could or should his WrestleMania opponent be? And are you bored with him or thinking Vince McMahon and company are doing a good job with him? And sensitivity training. What do you think about the skit on tonight's program? All right, we'll be back right after this word from our sponsors, rolling through calls. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, just like that, we are back. Don't forget, you can support us while you shop at Amazon. It is so simple. Don't go to Amazon.com directly. Instead, go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you do that, click the Amazon logo, click the country from which you reside, and shop away as you plan to anyway. Or you can scroll down a little bit and look at some wrestling merchandise that we recommend, some books, some DVDs, and other products on our Amazon page. But you can immediately go right to Amazon's homepage by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon. The way it works is they know you came from pwtorch.com, and we get a commission for sending you there. You pay the same price on the same merchandise you were planning to buy anyway, but a little bit of that profit that would go to Amazon goes to us, and it all adds up. And we really thank those of you who are already doing that this holiday season and year-round, and we invite others to join us. And with that said, let's go to the phone lines and go first to area code 740. 740, thanks for calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, it's Travis from Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, were you at the show tonight?
I know you like people calling into the show usually that go to the show, but I was not at the show tonight. Sorry, that's kind of disappointing, but I was going to go to the show, but I decided not to because I saw it was the Raw before the Christmas season, the holiday season. And I know those shows are kind of throwaways, and man, they definitely didn't disappoint tonight. I did not like the show at all, so that's why I didn't go to the show tonight.
No, fair enough. I think they delivered less of a Christmas-themed show than usual.
Yeah.
But I totally understand your fears and concerns. Jason Powell and I skipped last year's Raw in Minneapolis. It was the second year in a row they came here during the Christmas season, and yeah, it had not been a good. It was not a good episode of Raw. I thought this was more along the lines of a standard post pay per view Raw. That doesn't mean it was good or bad. It's just they didn't overdo it on ho ho ho, Merry Christmas, and all kinds of holiday themes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I just wasn't that enthused by it. One of the first things I noticed right away was the opening segment was kind of lame. Mick Foley messing up this Columbus's city name was kind of confusing. When he said Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then changed it to Columbus, Ohio, I didn't really get that. Why he kind of messed up the city name. I don't know if that was a work.
Yeah.
Or if I missed the joke there, do you have any conclusion on that? Or
I don't. No, I was wondering the same thing. If it was meant to be a joke, it went over my head.
Yeah. And just, this is the overall segment. You know, Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho are all right, but just not the usual, you know, standard I kind of see them at. It was just kind of a weird opening segment.
Yeah. And it went on and on and on.
Yeah. And then the Dar versus Cedric match, the ending was kind of weird to me. Like, he loves Alicia Fox, and I thought that was kind of random. I mean, I guess they're trying to do something with Cruiserweight division and have a storyline, but I thought that overall thing was just really random and kind of weird. And then just when Sasha Banks and the Charlotte had her match, and then Sasha Banks had her segment with Nia Jax. I thought, I know both women just came off a grueling match last night, but Sasha getting beat up and Charlotte losing via pinfall made them both look like losers. Didn't really like that. I thought the sensitivity training segment was awful. It was kind of like a weak version of the Team Hell No segments with Dr. Shelby. And if you're going to do those segments, I thought it would have been kind of funny to have Dr. Shelby doing that instead of the woman, which she did fine. But I thought Dr. Shelby would have been really funny if they would have had that and really would have raised the segment. I didn't really like the Braun Strowman ending. I think it's just another kind of push by them, just pushing some random big guy that Vince kind of likes. And he's big, and he comes out, and he kind of destroys Rollins and Reigns. And I can probably see that maybe Reigns versus Strowman at Mania, and then Reigns being the first person to beat him, which is unexciting. And then my last thing, I wasn't really a fan, and I didn't really get during the sensitivity training segment, when Enzo and Cass were brought up to the doctor, and she asked, "Was that your partner?" And Darren Young was sitting right there, and he's openly gay, and they kind of made an openly gay joke about Cass and Enzo being gay with each other. And I didn't really, I don't know, I thought it was kind of awkward, because Darren, maybe it was just me, but Darren Young was sitting right there, and it was kind of just like, okay. And that's about all I have. And the crowd was kind of dead tonight, and I didn't really blame the crowd for being dead all night. I thought they just didn't really offer them much. And
what is
that's
your,
all, yeah.
What's your prediction for Braun Strowman's opponent at WrestleMania?
I think Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns, yeah. All right. Yeah, certainly tonight's set up. Travis, I appreciate your thoughts on the show. Yeah, there were some awkward moments in the in that whole sensitivity training thing. The idea that WWE is putting a skit out there kind of, you know, mocking the idea that you go to sensitivity training makes me think somebody had to go to sensitivity training at some point and didn't like it, and they decided to turn it into some sort of a skit. You know, whenever you see stuff like that on WWE TV, it doesn't mean it's necessarily inspired by real life, but you do wonder if some, you know, writer on staff, or heck, Vince McMahon himself, was told by somebody, "Hey, if you weren't the boss, you'd be at sensitivity training." I don't know. When stuff like that comes up, or maybe it's just a backlash to the backlash against Enzo walking around naked backstage and supposedly being the babyface in this feud. And now they're just kind of mocking the idea that that would be insensitive, and mocking the idea that you'd have to go to sensitivity training to learn that that's a bad thing, as opposed to just anatomy and get over it and quit being so sensitive. So I don't know. The whole thing just feels uncomfortable and, worst of all, unfunny. You know, the idea that Cass or that Enzo says, "Oh yeah, my partner locked me out of my locker room," and the woman at sensitivity training is so oblivious that she thinks he means a boyfriend, partner. When the fact is people often refer to, straight couples often refer to each other as partners now. So the joke doesn't even work on that level, because when somebody says partner, it's not natural for anybody to assume that that means it's a same gender relationship. I think that even feels a little dated. So yeah, I didn't think it worked. Even if it wasn't dated, it's not that funny. I'm not sure that it's offensive. I think it just made Enzo and the doctor, the leader of the session, look a little presumptuous and defensive, but I don't think that there was anything offensive, except to perhaps sense of people with good senses of humor. All right, let's go next to 781. You're up next, 781. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. If you're on speakerphone, you can switch to direct.
Just took it
That's
off.
Better. Yep.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Mike's calling from Boston. How are you doing tonight?
Doing very good. Thanks for calling. What's on your
mind? Great. I'm glad to be on.
Thanks for calling.
So I thought there was a lot more bad than good when it came to Raw tonight. Although when there was good stuff, it was really good. I really enjoyed the Braun Strowman running at the end. I might be in the minority there. I kind of like what they're doing with Strowman right now. I like that they're building up kind of a big monster very slowly. He, I think, has gotten progressively better in the ring over this run. And a couple things he did tonight, just the way he kind of like just basically picked up and tossed in the air and caught Rollins in a running power slam was a nice, subtle little show of his power right there. It was like he kind of ragdolled Rollins and then did a really great running power slam. It's kind of difficult because I think anyone who beats on Roman Reigns is an immediate babyface at this point with the crowd, which is, you know, I mean, it's kind of sad, but, you know, he, and I was very happy that they didn't keep Reigns strong, quote unquote, by having him like Superman punch Strowman and kill all of heat during that segment. So I kind of like what they're doing with Strowman. That being said, knowing how fickle Vince is, his WrestleMania opponent will probably be Sin Cara in the pre-show. That's just, you never know how these things are going to go and when Vince is going to sour on it. But they're building a good little beast, and I think that Strowman could be a good special attraction monster heel for a long time if they do it right.
Yeah, I actually like what they're doing with Braun Strowman. If you're going to push a monster heel and build him up, you protect, first of all, you have him win squash matches, you break him away from someone who might, like Bray Wyatt, who might seem like he's higher in the group. You know, you want Braun to be his own guy. Let him dominate jobbers, let him dominate two jobbers, let him dominate some other people who are lower on the card, work his way up, show that he has a temper, have other people fear him, have him come off like a loose cannon with incredible power who isn't really all that worried about breaking China in the China shop, and eventually pay it off against a big name, whether it's a Roman Reigns or an Undertaker or John Cena or whomever. You know, I mean, we can list the possible names of different
right.
people who he might run into. It's probably Raw specific in terms of brand, but who knows? You know, that can change too.
And two little storytelling things I liked that they did tonight, and they seem like really little things, but one keeps Sami Zayn off the show. Felt
yes.
that he took a beating and has a night off. That's smart. And that'll relate to a point I've got in a minute or so here. And the other thing is not, you know, when he had his second run-in, just have it be a run-in. No entrance music, no time to prep for it.
yes.
No, you know, no two baby faces standing in the ring like jackanapes while a guy, you know, runs down the ring to deliver a beating. It's just like, no, surprise attack. I told you I'm going to mess up the show, and I'm going to do it. It's unexpected. Those are two good little stories. If the WWE creative could just get more consistent and deliver those little details, that gets you invested. That's what gets fans invested. I thought keeping in it, I love Sami Zayn. He's probably like one of my favorite guys on either roster. But I thought keeping him off tonight was a smart way to sell that he took a beating, even though I didn't think the match last night was any two great shakes. But it's just a smart way of doing it. And I, on that, on a similar note, what probably would have left Sasha off tonight's show and done the segment with Nia Jax in 1 week. If her knee, if you want to sell that the knee is that damaged and that injured, have her get treatment today and crutches a week later. I think I emailed this to you earlier, but I'd say that I think Nia Jax needs to kind of look at some tapes on how to deliver a real beatdown on an injured baby face. So I thought that was incredibly tepid and didn't really generate any real heat from the crowd, especially given how over Sasha is and anyone touching her. That should be a pretty, I would have done what they did with AJ Styles earlier in the year and had her run in over and over again until you almost had a pull apart at that point. As it was, you know, I thought it was pretty lame. And I think the feud's got some great potential. I think you get a chance to build a great female monster heel, but I don't think it's off to a great start quite yet.
Mike, lots of good comments. I'm going to pluck two of them to react to and then move on to our next caller too. One thing that I think is becoming clear is when the roster split took place, Vince McMahon had a big plan for Braun Strowman. A lot of people, including me, were going, why are they splitting up the Wyatt family? What's up with that? Are they burying Braun? Are they going to, you know, do they have ideas to build up a different kind of Wyatt family? And I mean, it just looks like Vince had a master plan as far as a big, big push for Braun Strowman, and he's stuck with it and he's been patient with it. And there's been a sense of long-term planning that's starting to pay off. And I just want to give credit when you see that, because I like to see more of it. You know, I mean, that's what we're seeing with Braun works in this is working to the degree that it is because it's been this nice, slow, patient build. And we can, you know, think, oh, they did the wrong thing. You know, it was the wrong time for Sami Zayn, or they could have booked the finish differently, or, you know, critique certain specific chapters of it. But overall, I like I like that it shows some long-term planning. Second of all, they weren't a bind because the main event on tonight's Raw was two baby faces against two heels. And had the two heels come out selling that they were injured from last night's beatdown that Seth and Roman gave them, that would have made them sympathetic by Mick Foley forcing them to wrestle again. So in the main event match, so they had to kind of blow off or diminish what they went through. I just think they shouldn't have done what they did last night. I mean, they shouldn't have done that big of an angle, just having Jericho and Owens run away instead of getting beat up that way and save the beatdown for tonight, I think would have led to more heat. I think if Roman Reigns was trusted to cut a promo, and frankly, if they don't trust him, they should still put him out there. He's never going to get better if you don't put him out there. This is a chance when somebody should be able to talk to him and get him to speak from the heart without a memorized script about how important winning that world title was and how frustrated he is that Chris Jericho didn't let him prove that he could beat Kevin Owens one-on-one and prove he's the better wrestler, because he knows in his heart he is. And he knows that the fans know that he is. And he was winning the title not just for himself, but also, and it might sound a little cheesy, but this is how wrestling works. And it's a big part of the fans getting behind a character, getting behind a wrestler, is I am winning this title not just for me, but for the fans. They're sick of seeing you two walk around taking co-credit for the title when everybody knows Kevin Owens couldn't defend this title without help from Chris Jericho. And once again, it happened again last night. And, you know, you guys pulled the ruse over a lot of people, but it doesn't matter how clever you are and how much you pat yourself on the back. At the end of the day, Kevin Owens is a weak champion who knows he isn't as good as I am, or else. And Chris, and what's more insulting, Kevin Owens, you should be insulted that Chris Jericho knows you're not good enough to win on your own because he keeps interfering on your behalf. But tonight, in the main event, I'm going to get my hands on you. And I'm frustrated, and the fans are frustrated, and they're going to get a chance to see me get my hands on you. And then build the match around Chris Jericho avoiding Roman Reigns for the first 12 minutes of the match. And have Roman Reigns tag in, and then Jericho tags out. You got a whole storyline there, and then you can actually build to this climactic moment where Reigns finally gets his hand on Jericho. But instead, all the revenge was last night after the main event of Roadblock. Huge, devastating beatdown by Seth and Roman on the heels, and then they come out and they don't sell it tonight. I mean, this isn't profound what I'm saying. I mean, that's the frustrating part. I think if you look at, you know, a few days ago, you go, all right, here's what we planned for Roblox, here's what we planned for Raw, and here's what baby faces do. They heel cheat to win, and then the babyface expresses in a believable way in his own words, which is should not be hard for somebody who eats, sleeps, and breathes this as a profession and understands the role that you play. The title is the ultimate prize. It's why we're all here. We're not here to sports entertain you. We're here to prove we're the best at what we do. Within the narrative structure of the show, you have to say that. Otherwise, it all falls apart. If we're all here to entertain, then juggle or play the trombone or rap. That's all side stuff if you do it at all. But you have to consistently have the core of the show and the constitution of every wrestler being, I'm the best and I want to prove it. Heels claim they're the best, but they're not, because they cheat or they have help from a friend. Babyfaces are the best. The fans in their heart believe it and know it, and they want and they like them, and they want them to prevail. That's the formula. Anything other than that should be an exception that only is an exception because you have a chance to make big money by breaking from that formula on rare occasion when it presents itself. And there are examples of that. But for the most part, that's the core. Good wrestlers against heels. Wrestlers who should win out of even playing field facing heels who frustrate the fans and the babyface wrestlers with cheating and underhanded tactics. And then the babyface cuts a promo. He gets the fans excited about him getting his hands on the heel, and you milk it. You make people wait to see the babyface get his hands on the heel to get revenge. And that just, it's like the last 48 hours were written by people who came from variety shows or buy into this notion that it's sports entertainment, not pro wrestling. So you should tear out of the core what pro wrestling is and then just make it a lot harder for yourself. You know, as cute as they might have thought sensitivity training was and how sports entertaining it might have been for their audience, what's going to be a lot more entertaining for the audience is Roman Reigns cutting a believable promo after not getting his hands on Jericho last night, but getting the fans to believe that that matters, that Jericho cost him a chance at the title, and get them excited about seeing Roman Reigns get his hands on Jericho once and for all in the main event. Again, this isn't profound. This is what I watched for decades. This is what I've watched when I watched old tapes of territories I didn't watch in real time. This is what every promoter's done, and they made money with it. And human beings haven't changed. Sports hasn't changed. Society hasn't changed. The motions that make that work are still there. And in 1975, a slightly higher percentage of fans knew that wrestling was, a slightly lower percentage of fans knew for sure that wrestling was a complete work. It was a slightly larger number of believers, but not a huge amount. It's just wrestling back then presented itself as more real, so people who wanted to believe had the room to believe. And that's just not being given to fans these days. And it's not because, well, the internet and these wrestling books and these podcasts spoiled the mirage. No, everybody knew going back a century that this stuff isn't a real sport, which is why sports, it's not like there was sports page coverage of pro wrestling in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, treating it like a real sport. And it was only until the mid-80s when Vince McMahon changed everything, or in the late 90s when Vince McMahon changed everything. People knew. They didn't have quite the detail. They didn't have access to wrestlers openly talking about it, but they knew what they watched wasn't real. You know, 2020 wasn't the first time somebody thought, hey, that guy sold a punch that didn't make contact. So it's not like the rules or the playing field is different. There's an easy way to do it and a hard way to do it. And the easy way is not having heels. As Mike from Boston said, take a beating and then not sell it the next day. That makes it harder because now how are fans supposed to get worked up over or even get all that excited about the next baby faces who are in a position to Seth and Roman tearing apart Owens and Jericho, or, you know, what the equivalent heels? Why should they get all that excited when the heels are going to strut to the ring and talk about their friendship and talk about outsmarting the baby faces and not sell the beatdown and then be able to wrestle a 20-minute main event match as if nothing happened the night before? Why should we take it seriously? I like that Sasha had the crutch. I'm not against her taking a week off like Sammy. I wish Mick Foley had said, and again, this is part of WWE not wanting to, it's so weird. They want you to be into the powerbomb off the stage. They want you to, in the moment, to be into the referees calling for a stretcher. They want you to be invested in that. That's why they bother doing it. But they don't want you to think it really hurt. It's very strange. And that's why you don't have the announcers talking about or referencing Sasha bleeding all over the place. You don't have Mick Foley talking about how Sami Zayn is too beat up from the match last night to wrestle. Instead, Mick Foley just sent him home early for his own good. So he kind of talks in a vague way, kind of around the idea that maybe Sammy is hurt, but they don't want you to think wrestling really hurts for some weird reason that they want you to be sports entertained enough to be really invested enough to cheer and boo and pay big money. But they also want to remind you, or at least not enforce the idea. They want to remind you that this is all for fun and it's all just to entertain. And boy, does it make it harder when you're watching the show and you're, all these opportunities are missed. It's frustrating. All right, let's go to the 30-minute break. We're going to come back, more phone calls, and we've got some the results of Mickey Gall, the fighter who beat CM Punk, fought again on Saturday night. We got full results of that fight and what happened afterwards over at MMATorch.com right now, along with a lot of other news, daily trivia, roundtable features, editorials, breaking news, and so much more. Check it out. That's our sister site. Here's more details on that. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we are back, and you can get in line on the phone. Banks, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345, or email us at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Let's go next to area code 215. 215, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Tim from Philly.
Hey, Tim, thanks for calling. What have you got for me? What's on your mind?
Not much. I'm just, I was at the show last week, and just the change in crowd from Philly to Columbus tonight is just a complete 180. The crowd was literally behind everything last night, and just coming from a pay-per-view, I expected a little bit of a hotter crowd, and, you know, it just goes to show how out of touch WWE is with their audience, and they can't deliver tonight after one of their biggest shows of the year.
Well, I think it goes into what I just talked about on the sermon last night, or on the sermon before the break, so to speak. I don't think that I think they've conditioned their audience to want to be sports entertained by New Day stuff and Enzo and Lana stuff, but not be emotionally invested in a babyface comeback, not be invested in the things that have made wrestling so entertaining when you're not doing a skits on sensitivity training, but instead getting people to believe in rooting for some people and against others for good reason when everyone's properly cast. And I mean, I think we see the effects of it. You're right. Some crowds are different than others, but I think they'd bat a higher percentage with a different approach that didn't seem to be running from the core formula of what's made pro wrestling work for, you know, over a century.
Absolutely. I mean, you have, like you said, the sports-like environment in NXT, which the fans eat that up left and right. Every single takeover show that they put on, the fans are on the edge of their seat from the opening match to the closing of the main event. And then we have Raw tonight, where most of the show is dedicated to backstage segments, which are rehashing, as the caller said earlier, the anger management hell no angle, which worked when you had good charisma with Glenn and Daniel Bryan, but that same charisma isn't there with Rusev and Enzo. It's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I thought it was a rough night. I mean, Roman still got apathetic response coming out, but not that, you know, like you want John Cena, at least the fans were passionate about John Cena when he came out. I mean, we're at a point where the good old days are when half the crowd was loudly booing your top babyface. And now we're at a point where those are the good old days, because now the crowd is just showing apathy towards the lead babyface. And that's a worse position to be in. And then he gets hot tagged in by Seth and you hear more boos than cheers. It's just, I mean, you can do the formula I spoke of, which is, again, I want to underline, not profound. I'm not asking for some revolution in wrestling. I'm just saying this just was the obvious thing every wrestling booker and promoter ever did who made money in all of history. Including what Ring of Honor does it, New Japan does. They all have their way of doing it, depending on the tone and tenor and culture of the promotion and their fan base and their history. But that is what they do, and WWE is paying a heavy price for not doing it at this point. And I think we do get more crowds like this as a result. Of course, it doesn't help. It's a 3.5-hour production for fans to sit there. That plays into it too. But yeah. Anyway, anything else, Tim?
Yeah, and I don't know what they're planning on doing to save it, but the state of the Universal title right now, I mean, it is probably their least over championship they have in the company. And that's supposed to be their premier title. They need to do something to rehab that quickly and get it off of Owens. It can't go under Roman Reigns, because that's going to put it in an even worse situation than it is right now. I'm just afraid of what they have planned going into WrestleMania, because I don't think anything that they have outside of Finn Balor coming back and taking it is going to bring that title back to where it needs to be.
Yeah, I don't think that the Universal title is going to be a major... the Universal title is not going to be a major selling point of WrestleMania. It might be almost like a prop for a bigger match that is big only because of who's in it, not because of the belt. But I do not think that the Universal title is in a position right now to make a positive difference based on how they treat it. And part of that is Roman Reigns, they won't put him on television and have him express either the week before or the day after why the title is important to him. And I mean, you can't function in a Vince McMahon formula of pro wrestling built around a strong lead babyface. That's his go-to approach. Different promoters and bookers have had a different approach over the decades in different territories. Sometimes it depends on the talent that they have. Sometimes it depends on the promoter or booker being a lead babyface, like Dusty Rhodes. He was the booker, so he was a lead babyface. And sometimes it had to do with the culture of that territory and what they were used to. But Vince McMahon has been he knew about Bruno, he knew about Backlund, he went with Hogan, he tried to go with Ultimate Warrior, heck, he tried to go with Sid, he wanted to go with Lex Luger, and then he went with Steve Austin during a different time when he was kind of drag kicking and screaming into a different approach to things, then embraced it, made a lot of money, and then went back to John Cena and tried with Batista, and you know, various others, and now he's trying to get with Roman Reigns. That's what he likes to do. That's his go-to, create a superhero. But if you pick that superhero lead babyface and you don't trust him to cut a promo, I was just watching the other day, thanks Dan, by the way, for this, Dan Kuster, for this, the link of Hulk Hogan's first localized promo for the WWF after he jumped from the AWA, where he was a huge star in the AWA territory, including the Minneapolis-St. Paul area in Minnesota, where Hulkamania was born. It was created. Fans demanded Hogan turn babyface, and he had a connection with them. And then Mean Gene Okerlund, who jumped from the AWA, also interviewed Hogan, and Hogan was cutting a promo saying, I have a love affair with the Twin Cities, and I'm back, and I brought the title, the real-world title from Madison Square Garden, bringing it back to Minneapolis-St. Paul, and Dr. D. David Schultz are not going to take it from me. And there was this connection that he had, and he valued the championship, and he talked about the connection with the fans. Every lead babyface does that, and Roman Reigns can't. And yet, Vince just thinks it's the best choice. I just don't think you can function with this formula without a babyface who can give a memorable promo and a convincing money promo. John Cena could. Sid could. You know, he had other deficiencies, but he could. Ultimate Warrior in his own crazy, whacked out way did. Obviously, Steve Austin and The Rock could. You know, I mean, it's just these last two episodes of Raw just show the lack of faith that Vince has in Roman. And I think that's a handicap that's going to be hard to overcome if Roman's ever going to actually get over as a babyface. Tim, anything else for me?
That pretty much covers all my points for tonight. Yeah. I just wanted to say thank you. I've been a VIP member since a little after WrestleMania 28, and it is easily the best money I spend every month for all my subscription services. And I spend over $100 a month on subscription services.
Wow. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's awesome.
Thanks for your business.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for your support, and thanks for mentioning it on the air. If you aren't a VIP member, go find out what Tim is talking about. pwtorch.com/govip. At the end of the show, I'll run a commercial spot here, an in-house commercial for VIP membership that details everything that comes with it. But we have 75 VIP exclusive audio shows a month, compatible with iPhones and Android podcast apps. You can stream them right from our ad-free VIP website, and you also get access to nearly 3 decades of archives, new retro radio shows. We just put up Bruce Mitchell and on Jim Valley's Total Chaos Radio. We just put up a few days ago for VIP members from 2001. They were talking about the WCW, the rumors of WCW being sold, and that WWF was a suitor, that they were interested, the then WWF was interested in purchasing the entire promotion. Now, that is before Fusion Media and Eric Bischoff came in and ended up looking like they were going to get the deal. And then WWF came in and basically bought them for scrap because there wasn't a lot left, especially once the Nitro and Thunder were actually canceled. But a fascinating look back at that era with Bruce Mitchell. 2001 was when the sale took place, but this was actually from October 2000. So this is about 6 months before really things came to a head and things resolved themselves. But a fascinating discussion, 107 minutes, Bruce Mitchell with Jim Valley talking about not only – actually, they didn't just talk about the potential of WWF buying WCW, but also the potential end of ECW. It was a pivotal 6 months, course-changing 6 months, and that is available when you go VIP, but we'll have even more details at the end of the show. So stay tuned for that at the end of the show. All right, up next, Brian from Peoria, Illinois. Brian, thanks for holding. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hey, Wade. Thanks for taking my call again.
Absolutely.
I have a couple topics. First, about Cesaro and Sheamus, the team. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it because I thought the teaming up of them at the beginning, you know, the whole reluctant partner act was getting pretty old pretty quickly, mm-hmm. you know, because it just felt so forced. Although I will say it is nice that Cesaro is getting to talk. You know, I think
yes.
one positive, just he's getting to talk, period, at all. And I thought... I thought for sure the direction they were going with them, you know, outsmarting New Day and getting what I thought was a genuine feel-good moment, even for Sheamus, who the fans seem to, you know, hate most of the time. I thought it was a really good babyface reaction when they won, and then right after the match, and then tonight, they go right back to the reluctant partners thing. So I'm kind of getting confused about that, because I thought they'd finally brushed that aside and were, you know, I guess embracing the babyface-ness of it all. And yet they're still doing the babyface heel, you know, kind of, I guess they're like a tweener act. I'm not really sure what they're doing with that.
I'll defend it a little bit. I think it's a work in progress, their relationship. And I think they're saying it's like, you know, two brothers who can't get along, but when push comes to shove, they're there for each other. I mean, they're overtly saying that. That's what, you know, Vince is feeding Corey Graves a line to say. So the idea is, yeah, these two, they're volatile. They're, you know, Noel and Liam Gallagher from the Oasis UK band in the 90s. They don't get along always, but they're brothers, and they're going to fight by each other's side, and they know that when they do fight together, they win. And I think they want to have a non-traditional tag team where the fans like Cesaro a lot, but Cesaro can hold his own with Sheamus. They seem like equals in that, but Sheamus has got a little bit of a thin skin, a little bit of an ego. Cesaro calls him on it, and I think the fans are still into that now, especially that they have progressed to actually being a main event, or I shouldn't say main event, but a top of a division act. And right now they're at the top of the division with the tag titles, and I think it makes the journey more worth it. I think Brian, spun their wheels on this a little longer because they just wanted to get to New Day breaking the record. I think we probably would have seen this moment 3 to 6 weeks earlier had they not wanted New Day to break the record. But that made it maybe seem like it dragged on, because even WWE would agree it dragged on, but they just had to get to this point, and then they quickly switched the belts because that's where they wanted to go with it. The crowd seems to like it. I mean, I read every house show report we get. If you attend a live event, please email a report to pwtorch@gmail.com. pwtorch@gmail.com. We really appreciate results and as much details as you can muster to tell us about, and check out pwtorch.com for those house show live event and TV taping results that we always post on the site. And those house show reports people are sending in, it's like Sheamus and Cesaro and their bickering is over. So I'll defend it in that sense. I've had some reservations, and I agree with you that it seemed to drag, but I kind of understand why. And I think they're in an okay spot now. I think they're not tweeners. Cesaro's a baby face and Sheamus is a baby face who has a tendency to stick his foot in his mouth or let his ego get in the way sometimes. But I think Sheamus is a babyface. I mean, he's not doing heelish things other than trying to steal some of the credit from Cesaro. And I just don't think that's enough to make you a full-fledged traditional heel. It's not like Sheamus is doing nasty things. He's just got a thin skin and an ego that come on display. So I'm okay with it. I'm not only okay with it, I'm enjoying where we are right now with it.
Yeah, I agree. I, like, again, like most of the fans at the show, I kind of got out of my seat when they got the pin too, because it was a really cool moment. I guess I just kind of wish that Sheamus wouldn't like flip flop with his mannerisms, but I guess, you know, they can't just do a sudden turn, I suppose. But
I think fans would reject it if Sheamus suddenly started acting all smiles and happy. I mean, I don't think it would ring true. You know, I think that aspect of things is a longer journey.
Okay. And my second topic is about with the cruiserweights. I thought it was really cool to see Neville come out the way he did last night. And I got excited for him just because they were just doing nothing with him for a pretty long time. And then he comes out today and, you know, cuts a pretty scathing promo, and I'm thinking all is well. And then when Kendrick comes out when Swan comes out and then Kendrick comes out, I'm thinking it instantly reminded me of, in a way, kind of the beginning of the Divas Revolution story, where everyone was like on teams and it was just teams going against each other. And sure enough, later on in a commercial, for 205 Live, they promoted Perkins and Swan against Kendrick and Neville. And I was just thinking, why can't they just keep it to like singles stars? Why do they have to team everyone up? You know, because it seems like they're not really learning from their mistakes with that
Yeah, I mean, I know where you're coming from. I think we did, you know, we saw Seth and Roman team up against Jericho and Owens. But it's just two heels and two baby faces who have common enemies. I think Kendrick is, I think it's good to have Kendrick playing second fiddle to Neville in a way, because I don't think that people saw Kendrick as a top guy. Neville, I think, right, has a little less, he's been defined down a little bit less. And since he's been away for a while and now he's a heel, they've given us two reasons to believe that we should give him a fresh look. It's why Seth Rollins, when he came back in May at Extreme Rules in New Jersey, fans were very eager to cheer him, and that was the right time to turn him babyface if they were going to. Of course, I'm going off a little tangent here, but I mean, the Finn Balor injury certainly mitigates some criticism, because it's not like they had this master plan and it was an inferior plan. They just were in a bind. But because Seth had been away, it created a reason to give a fresh look to him. Hey, he might have changed his mind about things when he's been gone, and he'll address that, and fans missed him. So with Neville, I think they don't, you know, because he was away for a while, he's got a new look, and he's a heel. He has a chance to rise to the top. I don't think they just want to give away Neville versus Rich Swann right away. They want to use a tag match as a way to build that up. I think we saw Cedric and Noam Dar earlier, not part of a, we're all cruiserweights. They're two people with an individual feud, with Noam Dar being kind of creepy and wanting to very overtly, in the way that he talks about Alicia Fox, he talks about her in language you should only use if you are intimate with somebody and they are agreeing for you to speak about them that way. And so I actually kind of get a kick out of Noam Dar's approach, because he's not this underdog with a crush that some people are going to be sympathetic towards. He's a creep, and he's moving in on a relationship that looks like it's going well. So that's off to the side, and that's separate. So you got to fill an hour on 205 Live, and you want to give people a reason to watch. I'm fine with the tag match, and I also see that they are developing some separate feuds. So all in all, I'm more okay with what they did this week than I think you are, Brad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just I don't know. I just get the impression that they don't think that, like, I don't know. I think that they feel the need to, like, team everyone up as a way to just, like, consolidate feuds, like multiple feuds into one, instead of just flushing them out individually.
I guess,
I don't know. I feel like they ran their course with the Kendrick stuff already, and you know, it just feels weird for Kendrick to all of a sudden, like, team up with him just by virtue of there being another heel. I just think it's a little strange.
Yeah, the alliance seems to come a little out of nowhere, and it would be nice to have a little more backstory on that. Yeah, I get what you're saying there. All right, Brian, cool. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Wade.
Appreciate it. Yep. I was good to hear from you. All right, let's go next to Sharif from New Jersey. Sharif, thank you for calling again. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Wade, how's it going?
Going well.
So the pay-per-view last night was in Pittsburgh, so let's chalk up the Mick Foley mistake to just one too many chair shots.
Well, I mean, you know, we say it with a chuckle, but that's you know, there's a chance that that is. I mean, heck, I make mistakes. I interchange, you know, Braun Strowman and Rusev in my TV reports or commentary sometimes, because they're two big thuggish heels, and my mind just goes into autopilot, and I, you know, don't. I mean, I really know who's in the feud, but my fingers or mouth betray what's in my head and in the image I have. I mean, it was very much a slip, but it's an error anybody could have made. But if Mick Foley makes more than average, I think we all do think too many chair shots.
I think there's something personally, to it. Yeah, I'm personally not knocking him. I just, you know, the crowd reacted quite negatively to it.
Yes, that's hard to recover from. When NXT was in St. Paul, I'm drawing a blank speaking. I haven't taken any chair shots to that, and I can't remember who did this right off. but I don't know if it was a ring announcer or a wrestler. I think it was a wrestler came out. Some wrestlers came out, and they started talking about Milwaukee. And then we're like, oh, boo. You know, like, we're in St. Paul, not Milwaukee, because they you know, were in Milwaukee two nights earlier or something. So the crowd boos, and you're like, okay, well, that was a heel move, right? Or, you know, it meant to be.
Yeah.
And then he goes, oh, I'm sorry. We're here in Minneapolis. And if you want to get heat in St. Paul, say that you're in Minneapolis, because they're two equal cities separated by a river. Minneapolis, slightly more population, has its own bragging points over – It's the home of the State Fair. It's the home of the some really prestigious small colleges. It's got its own beautiful downtown and a great art district and all this stuff that makes it a major city. It wants to be known as its own city. So when somebody comes to town, like if you're a lead singer in a band and you're in St. Paul and you go, Minneapolis, how's it going? You're not going to get the response you expect. So, I mean, I see that a lot. And, you know, or when MSNBC for the Republican convention, I remember they came to town and they were set up in, like, I think Rice Park outside the Capitol of St. Paul and outside XL Energy Center where the convention was. And they kept saying, we're here in Minneapolis. And people are like, no, you're not. You are absolutely no more in Minneapolis than you are in Milwaukee. You're in St. Paul. So if you want to get heat and you want to get a Minnesotan riled up, or anybody in any city, get their city wrong. So Mick had a little challenge to recover from there.
It's that hometown pride.
Yes.
Just kind of staying on the on that segment, what do you make of this gimmick match where now Jericho is going to be hanging in a cage above the ring? Do you think, you got to figure there's something planned with that, because why wouldn't he just make it that if Jericho interferes, then Owens automatically loses the title?
He can't do that because Jericho's going to interfere. Because Jericho's going to be, as Jason Powell pointed out in his Raw report at ProWrestling.net very astutely, every time there's a heel, and we saw it with Paul Ellering on the NXT TakeOver special, if you're a heel manager or a heel hanging in a cage above a ring, no matter what, you're going to find a place to hide a foreign object that doesn't get caught, and you're going to drop it late in the match, and either the heel's going to use it to win or the babyface is going to get a hold of it and use it to win. But that's how that match is likely going to end based on pro wrestling history. And they're just setting it up. I mean, the idea is, Jericho keeps helping Owens win. Mick Foley's thinking here's a smart way to stop Jericho from interfering. But if you just say, hey, Jericho, if you interfere, Owens loses the title. I mean, of course, that's obvious. But that's also why you shouldn't, when you hit the ropes, run back at the guy so he can clothesline you. There's certain questions we just can't ask, or certain things we can't expect of wrestling. And yes, one of them is managers are banned from ringside. And if anybody interferes, you and the person you're interfering on behalf will be fired and never wrestle again. I mean, you could go to that extreme, but that would ruin a lot of angles and storylines. We'd have very little to work with at that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's actually kind of my follow-up is, do you feel that the roster situation is so thin that just going into WrestleMania, do you see, like Roman Reigns, for example, where would you see him going into WrestleMania, and if he's ever going to drop the U.S. title to move on to the Universal, who do you think he would drop that to?
I don't think he's going to lose the U.S. title. I mean, there's creative ways to do it where you could kind of protect him. But having somebody move up to holding the number one singles world title, but to lose the secondary title first clean is a really good way to undercut somebody's world title run. Cause you're basically saying they're not good enough to hold the secondary title, but somehow they lucked into a world title. So Roman's going to hold both belts like Conor McGregor, and then the company's going to strip him of the lesser title and hold the tournament so that you can look forward to that in February if he wins at the Rumble. But plans can change. I don't believe anything. I don't believe any finish I hear is final until I see it happen. And even then, on occasion, as AWA fans, speaking of Hulk Hogan, he won the AWA title and then was stripped after everybody left the building, not until they announced it on TV. So you can't even believe finishes sometimes, even when you're in the building watching it happen and the guy celebrate to his music. With Roman, I think he's going to beat Kevin Owens for the Universal title. I think it will be Jericho drops a chain and Reigns ends up with it. I don't think Reigns should beat Owens by using the chain, but I think he should get the chain away from Owens and then beat him with the spear or something like that. And I think Reigns goes into WrestleMania as Universal champion and is defending it against either the Royal Rumble winner or another top contender. And I won't rule out that being Braun Strowman, because they're both on the same brand, and Braun just attacked Roman. So it's the obvious thing right now, Monday night, December 19th. I think the odds went up greatly that we'll see that match. And it makes sense. Vince McMahon is preoccupied, maybe he's overstating it, but certainly has one of his primary focuses is without a doubt, what have we got for Roman? You know, I mean, Vince Russo and Ed Ferrar talked about that multiple times, including with me on the Ultimate Insiders DVD series, that Vince, we'd go into meetings and Vince would go, what have you got for Stone Cold? And then next, what have you got for Rock? And then maybe a third person, but it was deep into the conversation and they'd be like, all right, everything else looks good. Bye. And I think that's where he is right now with Roman. And given that Braun's push has been so steady and long-term planned, I think Vince is looking at Roman Universal Champion defending against Braun Strowman, who may be the Royal Rumble winner this year. And that is a top four match at WrestleMania this year.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. So, we'll see. Anyway, thanks for taking my call.
Cool. Well, I was good talking to you, Sharif. Right. I always like my, once a year chance to talk about how St. Paul is not Minneapolis and Minneapolis is not St. Paul. There's a whole controversy here. It used to be the airport. It was the Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport. And then they, like 10 years ago, St. Paul's mayor was all upset because the airport had agreed to let the official name of the reference of where people were landing to be Minneapolis as opposed to Minneapolis St. Paul. And that was seen as a big defeat to St. Paul being treated as an equal. All right. Let me look at the email, because I know we got a couple emails that I wanted to touch on here. Jeff from Colorado said two questions and a concern. First question, why do they insist on doing that close-up of the eyes of Nia Jax? Please use your connections to make it stop. I think Nia Jax is a good opponent for Sasha Banks next. I think the size difference is compelling and it set Sasha Banks up in a sympathetic way after the setback against Charlotte. But I'm still not sold on Nia Jax in certain ways because cross, and this is the worst thing possible for a monster heel, she comes across like somebody who would be really nice if you met her outside the context of wrestling. And she's got to work on that. I mean, it's not everybody has it in them, but I'd say she's getting better. And I wouldn't say tonight was a swing and a miss entirely, but there's still something about her. And I think they're trying to focus on the eyes just to go for like that. She's got this, deep, intense, monster in her. And I just don't think she does. And I think that's why you think it's not working. And yeah, I don't think that's necessarily the best approach to take with her. I think there's better ways to film her than, if the eye thing worked, that's fine. I just don't think it is. Second question is Cesaro's Kinesio tape, the new Bob Orton cast. Well, Kinesio tape is to hold a shoulder joint in place where the ligaments have stretched so often that you're susceptible to a shoulder dislocation. And I mean, I've had my shoulder dislocated a number of times playing basketball and more than once in karate. And when it happens once, it happens more easily the next time. It's like concussions in that way. It just becomes easier and easier for it to pop out. And there's only so much you can do to build muscle around that area to prevent it from happening. I think it's Sean Daivari, Aria Daivari's older brother, who has that issue too, where it'll just pop out regularly. And he just pops it right back in. He's so used to it. And it's less painful now because the ligaments have been stretched out. It's a horrible feeling. It's awkward and painful to have your shoulder pop out of joint and to not, especially if it doesn't pop in right away. It's awful. And I think that, Cesaro doesn't want that to happen. And the Kinesio tape helps in that regard. And I'm not sure that it will ever get better enough that he can take it off. So in a way it's a Bob Orton cast in that I think we're going to be looking at it for a while, but it's not meant to garner heel heat. And with a cast, bones heal. But shoulder ligaments that leave you and tendons that leave you more susceptible to dislocation and separation don't. So it's sort of in a way the opposite. Bob Orton milked a situation with an injury that heals itself and Cesaro's in a situation that doesn't. All right, a concern. It feels like Raw is used to do rematches from 205 Live the previous week. It's starting to feel like the days where SmackDown was a test market. If a match goes well, they'll put it on Cruiserweight Purple Palace. Yeah, I mean, there's something to that. The reason I'm kind of pausing is I'm not necessarily, Jeff, against doing rematches, and I don't know that they've been consistently doing it one way or the other. I think sometimes a rematch is good because you've done the angle on 205 Live that gives a rematch some juice. So, they can run an angle and say, all right, this happened on 205 Live. Now on Raw, you get to see the rematch. And other times a match happens on Raw, or an angle happens on Raw, or Roadblock, a pay-per-view that sets up a match on 205 Live. I just think they should shake it up, make sure that, it's close to 50-50, and that they're not you know, just doing it one way where one show feels more important than the other. All right, Gary sent this in during the show. So the U.S. title literally means nothing. Why not have Braun win the title with the aid from Owens on an upcoming Raw and then have Sammy chase? They could do that. I don't know that you want Sammy. I guess you got to do Sammy Braun again, don't you? I mean, you know, maybe on a Raw. But it's just tough because they booked the match. I talked about this with Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant on the VIP roundtable last night when we did our VIP exclusive post pay-per-view roundtable, which is easily one of the most popular VIP exclusive features. And we talked, you know, about the dilemma. The reason they did the 10-minute challenge is they didn't want Sammy to have to job out to Braun because they have some plans for Sammy. They want to protect him, but they have bigger plans for Braun. I don't know how eventually matching them one-on-one solves that. And I mean, we saw tonight and last night, you know, with Cass and Enzo in the main event and other matches, they're not paying off matches. And if you start doing that too much, fans will grow to expect it and rebel against it. And they're in the danger zone now of doing that. They need to start doing some clean finishes. It's not the end of the world. It happens. You know, Sage Northcutt isn't done as an attraction or a prospect because Mickey Gall decisively beat him in the second round on Saturday night. Sage Northcutt's still a 20-year-old with a huge future and is going to win a lot of fights and might hold the title someday. He just ran into a guy who is right now better than him. And that can happen. So in that sense, I'm not all that worried about Braun beating Sammy clean, but it seems like WWE is. Braun could win the U.S. title, but I don't know that they want to give away Braun and Roman just to switch the U.S. title. I don't think Vince thinks the U.S. title is important enough to give away the Braun-Roman match before Mania, if that's where he's going with it, or maybe they're going to do it sooner than that in some other context. He doesn't think the U.S. title is important enough to give away a big match he's building to ahead of time, and I kind of agree with him. I'm not all that against the U.S. champion winning a world title and relinquishing the championship. I think in a way it gives the U.S. title more credibility because it was a stepping stone to the world title, and then then you hold the tournament to crown a new champion. I'm not really against that. I mean, my preference would have been Roman not win the U.S. title, period, but once they decided to do the feud with Rusev and you're building up Roman as a lead babyface, you don't want him to seem like he lost a feud to Rusev. So I think Vince just lays out the pros and cons and says, this U.S. title is going to take a little bit of a hit. It's not going to be defended as often, and it's not going to be around the waist of somebody who it can help, build up. I need Roman to win his feud with Rusev, and I need him to hold that title until he wins the Universal title. And I think that's the mindset that he's in. I don't necessarily disagree with him. All right, Lawrence from Tacoma, Washington, just emailed this in 33 minutes ago. He said, love the show. I'm out west, so Raw's just now on my TV. But I listen to the pod every day. My question is, it appears that WWE's been trying to drum up some of the magic of the Shield by putting Rollins and Reigns together as a duo. However, I wonder why WWE hasn't just tried to redo that idea with three or four new talents from the Performance Center. The talent and energy those three wrestlers were much needed at the time and has carried the company the last few years. A group similar to that could shake up the main event scene and inject some much needed life into storylines. Do you think something like that could work again in 2017? If I were to do it, I would use talent seldom used on NXT TV, like Dan Matha used to be used in the Reigns, could be used in the Reigns role. Thanks for all you do and have a good evening. I think the danger is you don't want to look like you're trying to create a sequel to The Shield unless you think you have a really, really good sequel. I don't think being a sequel means that you can't get over, but boy, it's a tough spot to be in. You know, I mean, Rick Bogner and Glenn Jacobs as the new Diesel and new Razor Ramon didn't work because the reason that Scott Hall was Razor Ramon and Kevin Nash was Diesel is those characters were their ideas and fit their image and their personalities, and putting two other people in that spot isn't organic. They weren't, you know, Rick Bogner was not at the Scott Hall level in any way. And as we have seen, Glenn Jacobs was meant for other things and destined to play a different character. I mean, does anybody think of Kane and Kevin Nash as similar, like, types of wrestlers? I mean, they're just, their range is so different. Their approach and characters are so different. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to be chosen if I'm at NXT to be in the new Shield. Now that said, if you got three guys and it's a mix of talent and they have chemistry, and you can give them a similar push as a Shield, that's fine. I mean, it's not all that different than, you know, Wade Barrett, you know, coming in with an invasion of sorts in his debut and being shot to the top. There's different ways you can do that you can do that without having the pressure of having to live up to the magic that was Dean, Seth, and Roman. But bringing wrestlers in all at once as a threesome from NXT isn't a bad approach to take, but they got to find the right guys. They shouldn't force it. All right, Damon from Jacksonville emailed. He said, after weeks of beatdowns to Enzo, I find it hard to see him as any kind of credible threat to anybody on the roster with the exception to James Ellsworth, and even that's a stretch. I understand the goal is to make Cass look strong, but they've totally buried Enzo as an in-ring competitor. At this point, would they be better off just dissolving Enzo and Cass as a tag team and just use Enzo as his manager? Well, I don't think they think real highly of Enzo as an in-ring talent. You know, he's a decent tag wrestler who's got some deficiencies in the ring. I think some of it isn't all that important in the WWE landscape for what Enzo's role is, but it does does frame him as somebody who's not going to end up being put in a situation to try to have world-class one-on-one matches. He's half of a tag team that is destined to eventually break up with Cass being a singles guy. Cass continues to grow. He's clearly the person that Vince sees more money in. But Enzo's being used better than, you know, at a higher level than a Scotty Too Hotty. I mean, I was thinking today watching Raw, there's a lot of guys in NXT who are around Enzo and Cass who hope to someday be in the spot that Enzo's in. They'd love to make it to that level. And instead they're, you know, stuck barely on NXT TV or not on NXT TV or been cut and released or have no hope to get to the main roster or feel they don't. I mean, Enzo's playing a valuable role. And I don't think it should be seen as them burying him as much as evaluating his skill set and his character and putting him in a certain spot on the baseball field. That is WWE. Not everybody is going to be a Daniel Bryan or not everybody's going to be a Seth Rollins. And I just think they see Enzo and they see him as a bit of a, you know, bit of a corny over the top character, but worth more than a Zack Ryder. You know, I think they think higher of him than Zack Ryder. I think they've given him a lot more TV time and a push than Zack Ryder ever got. He gets a lot of TV time and that's a compliment to him, even if it's not quite a full on, you know, singles push or treating him as a serious tag team wrestler. But yeah, I mean, eventually, and as soon as possible, I think in Vince's eyes, they want Cass to be a singles guy. All right. Nicholas in Mountain View, California just emailed. He said, about an hour ago, he said, I think it's clear now that Charlotte is the best heel on Raw, male or female. Well, I'm still not sure if I'm supposed to hate Seth Rollins, Rusev, Kevin Owens, or Chris Jericho. I tune in every paper. You're hoping that she loses. And I'm disappointed when she wins. She's done such a great job playing a character that I hate. And she is, in my opinion, what makes a women's division legitimate. Good comment. Why isn't there even one male on Raw? We have Miz on SmackDown who is playing a true heel like Charlotte. Is it that they're afraid of losing merchandise sales or want to be seen as cool? Rusev was almost there before the Roman Reigns feud permanently changed his standing or damaged his standing. Now the Enzo stuff is just confusing. Nicholas in Mountain View, California. Yeah, I mean, Charlotte is pretty close to the best at this in terms of how she carries herself on television. I mean, she is not getting any validation from ever being cheered. You can tell she judges her success as a character for being booed. And there's not a lot of heels who are doing that, who are willing to forego a witty comment that might get themselves over, you know, and get a laugh because she wants to be the arrogant queen who fans want to see get chopped down. And no, you're right. She's doing a great job. And I think she's more of a template than anybody for how to portray a heel in 2016 effectively and proof that it can still be done in the way that she's doing it. Brian from Peoria. Oh, you already emailed. So, you said, Neville could be given a squash match, some squash matches to build himself up to get his in-ring heel tactics over as opposed to merely teaming up. Yeah. I mean, Brian, it just going back to your point, I would not have had a problem if, instead of going right to a tag match that they had Neville on 205 Live win a squash match. And, you know, they could have built up, 205 Live just saying last night and not even have Neville on Raw tonight, just say on Roadblock, Neville showed up. And he turned on Rich Swann, who he's got a history with, a friendship with. So Rich Swann thought, and he's going to be on 205 Live to explain himself. And he is scheduled for a match. And you just put him against, you know, Ariya Daivari, you know, whatever, somebody who's there as well, Arya's got a bit of a feud going, but you know, you put him against a guy who you don't mind jobbing, and you have Neville just be vicious and cruel, and maybe beat him up after the bell so that Rich Swann runs out to make the save, and then Brian Kendrick attacks Swann, and then Perkins makes a save, and then he can set up a tag match for next week. I think they probably rushed into it. I'm not against the tag match as much as I think I'm for pacing it out a little bit better. And I think you brought up a really good point. I do want to note that if you've been on hold all show and we didn't get to you, especially if you're a first-time caller, you need to push 1 on your touchtone phone, first of all, in order to enter the caller queue. Second of all, it doesn't hurt to email pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com and put your phone number in the subject line. I know it's a pain, but it's a good approach to take if you want to get on the show. And you can tell us what your topic is and where you're calling from. It makes things go a little smoother, and it also takes any technical error out of the one not registering when you push it with the switchboard that we use. So it's a good approach to take, and I need to mention that early in the show to avoid some of you getting frustrated. But we try to get to as many calls as we can, but I see a ton of you I can see are in the standby or in the listen section, but not in the caller queue. So anytime you want to be on the show and you call, be sure to push 1 on your touchtone phone. And if it turns out we don't get to you, email us at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. It's possible the tone on your phone is not registering with Blog Talk. All right, let's take one more call as we wrap up. 267. You just pushed 1 on your touchtone phone, so I thought I'd reward you. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Thanks, Wade. This is Joe from Philadelphia.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I was on my mind earlier about the whole Roman Reigns U.S. title scenario fiasco. It's been going on in the WWE, but you kind of answered that for me. So I'll just hit you with a quick question here.
Yeah.
Who do you got for the Rumble this year?
Well, I'm not willing to make an official pick yet. I think there's still a number of options, and I think we have to see how things play out. It could be Finn Balor. Could be Braun Strowman. Could be Brock Lesnar or Goldberg. I mean, I think, and that's not even an exhaustive list, I just don't think it's come into focus yet, you know, where we can narrow it down to one. And I'm happy about that. I hope on January 20th that it's not a foregone conclusion who's winning. I'd love to go into the 29th, not sure. And I'd love to have 3 or 4 or 5 or even 6 legit candidates where I can imagine them winning in the final 8 so that the Rumble is more exciting. And again, even when you think you know, sometimes you don't. But I mean, a few years back, I wrote a cover story in the Torch newsletter saying Batista's winning the Rumble and put it in the headline because there was literally nobody else. There was just nobody else you could imagine winning the way WWE operated. It just wasn't plausible. At this point right now, with 2 world championships especially, I think there's going to be more options going into it. But I mean, we're December 19th. We got too much time to go before to focus entirely on one. But that said, do you have a top 1 or 2 people in mind that you'd put your money on right now if you had to?
You obviously go to Baylor, you know, coming back from that big injury, WWE looking for that big top baby face, which, I mean, with the whole thing with Roman, you know, I'm kind of really upset what they did with the U.S. title. I mean, you see with SmackDown, the progress they made with the Intercontinental Championship. Miz's reign was absolutely fantastic. The way they're going now, I guess they're going to swap opponents. They're going to do AJ and I forget who is Miz feuding with. Wow, just lost it in my brain. Because Miz is going to be feuding with Ambrose now.
Yeah, Apollo Crews.
Ziggler.
Oh,
right?
Oh, okay, Ziggler, sure, yeah. And they shifted to Apollo Crews last week, but Ziggler is who they were feuding with.
Yeah, exactly. They're like swapping opponents on SmackDown right over there. So, I mean, SmackDown looks like it's doing good. If I had to choose right now, I mean, I would love to see Sami Zayn win it. I mean, they have this whole underdog thing going where, you know, he can't win, you're too small, you're too little. I mean, I would love to see that happen, but I don't see it happening, especially with the whole buzz around Baylor. So I'm going to put my money on Finn Baylor this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not optimistic, or even, I shouldn't say optimistic. I don't think the odds are particularly good, but I don't think we can rule out yet Samoa Joe or Shinsuke Nakamura making, you know, a quote, surprise entrance. Hopefully it would be a surprise, and winning. Place would explode. I mean, the place would go nuts.
Oh, yeah.
There are going to be, you know, hardcore fans who know who those two are. And if one of them were to come out and win and just get shot to the top to be in one of the top 4 matches at Mania, that would be a big Rumble moment also. And that's why I say I don't want to narrow it down. And I hope 4 weeks from now, I haven't narrowed it down to 1 or 2.
Thank you, Wade. I appreciate
being
on the show.
Absolutely. You bet. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. That'll do it for me. As I said, you can support us by going to pwtorch.com/Amazon and click on the link that matches your country. You've got a whole bunch of countries now that we have Amazon partnership affiliates with. And choose your country and shop away as usual. And we get a cut of the profit that would go to Amazon instead. You can also follow me on Twitter at @TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch. And follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PWTorch. And you can also support us by going to PWTorch.com for news and special features. We've got some really good new writers doing specialist columns. The best and worst of last week is up right now on the website. What was the best and worst? Also, Rising Stars and Underachievers, another weekly column that we've added to the mix, plus the Raw Primer and the SmackDown Primer. We got busy lives. You watch Raw by next Monday, prime you for what's coming up. And some ideas getting written on what happened last week and where that could lead this week. Just a whole range of other features. We've got progress reports, orienting you with results and detailed analysis of matches and cards from a really ardent progress fan who's going to be reviewing shows for us that are available on demand. I could go on and on. Some really cool new features at pwtorch.com over the past few weeks. Make it a point to check it out either on mobile or desktop and go through the specialist section especially. But you can go to the results section, catch up on live event results. You can go to the news section and catch up on news. We just put up some analysis and perspective on the Raw ratings and SmackDown ratings from last week to put some context to what the numbers mean. Same thing, by the way, over at MMATorch.com in today's Daily News Digest on the numbers for Fox on Saturday for UFC on Fox and comparing it to other TV shows. And so support us there. And of course, the absolute number one way to support us is going VIP. And we give you a ton in return. Nearly 30 years of my professional life's work and that of a tremendous staff over the years. Going back to Mark Madden, pre-WCW Nitro commentator, did audio shows and wrote columns for the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. Just amazing Torch Talks when no one else was doing insider interviews and talking on record with wrestlers about the business. The Torch Talks started it. My Torch Talk series was the signature that put Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter on the map in the late 1980s, controversial interview with Vern Gagne, Chris Cruz, when he was the WCW syndicated lead announcer doing an interview with the Torch, when nobody talked on record with the Torch who worked for one of the two major companies. They were insider dirt sheets and you can't talk to those people. They exposed the business. And Chris Cruz got in a little trouble for that one. Eddie Gilbert, Paul Heyman, so many influential interviews that you can read when you go VIP. Is a fascinating rabbit hole of sorts that you'll go down when you go into those archives and the back issues of the newsletter, the old retro radio shows, and our VIP audio shows going back a dozen years, all available when you go VIP. When you sign up, be sure to go to, after you become a member, it's mobile friendly, it takes a minute or two to sign up. Once you have your username and password, orient yourself to everything by going to pwtorchvip.com. That's our ad-free VIP website. That's the headquarters for your content. When you go VIP, pwtorchvip.com. It's an ad-free version of everything on the free site, pwtorch.com, with exclusive articles, newsletters, back issues, new newsletters, audio, retro audio, links to our archives, everything. pwtorchvip.com/VIP tips. That's pwtorchvip.com/VIP tips. When you sign up, that page will orient you to all the different features and benefits and how to best take advantage of them, including how to create an app-like home screen button on your Android or iPhone so that you can get an ad-free app experience one click away on your home screen, accessing everything that comes with a VIP membership, and also how to sign up with our RSS feeds for VIP audio. We've got a dozen RSS feeds for the different VIP audio shows that we do. You can sign up for a VIP or an RSS feed on a podcast app on iPhone or Android that catches all of our shows, or you can break it down by show or by theme. It's real flexible. It's very user-friendly. All of that is explained at pwtorchvip.com/VIP tips. So here's some more details on what comes with the VIP membership, and that'll do it for me for today. Thanks to great callers and great emails, and I'll be by tomorrow with Greg Parks right after SmackDown. Thanks, everybody. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with a 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. I mentioned the Jim Ross interview earlier. Don't forget to check that out if you missed it at pwtorchlivecast.com. That's the homepage for this show. Not pwtorch.com, pwtorchlivecast.com for access to all the free audio shows we do throughout the week. The livecasts, livecasts are all ad-free and plug-free, with the exception here and there if we miss one. I've got to be honest, sometimes we forget to edit one out. But for the most part, the vast majority of the ads and plugs taken out for VIP members, but you can get all the free shows with ads at pwtorchlivecast.com. On the right sidebar, you can scroll down and see our latest interviews. Jim Ross last week, a much talked about interview with Al Snow a couple weeks ago that I highly recommend you check out. It's not dated at all, and it is a high-end university lecture from somebody who has very strong points of view on what works in wrestling, what's wrong today, and how to fix it. And it got an incredibly positive response from people who listen to the show, and I encourage you to check it out. It's the side of Al Snow you've probably never seen. He is now training wrestlers and has decades of experience in so many different roles in wrestling, and I encourage you to check that out too. That's over at pwtorchlivecast.com. All right, that does it for me. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch. Follow our sister brand at MMATorch, and support us when you shop Amazon by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon. I'll be by tomorrow with Greg Parks, and until then, Wade Keller, PW Torch editor, signing off. This is life.